What is Communism? And Dr. Zudi Jasser is a guy who's been on this program forever. Is he the Grand Mufti of the Stealth Jihad? We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Something came to my attention yesterday, and I wanted to get Zudi Jasser on right away. Zudi Jasser has been a friend of mine for, I don't even know, 15 years maybe. He is, I believe, one of the bravest Muslims in America today, one who still practices his faith. There are many people who used to be Muslim who left their faith. He is a guy who still practices his faith and is a reformer, is somebody like Martin Luther who says we have to reform this. There is a difference between Islam and Islamists. If you are a Muslim, that's not necessarily a problem. If you're an Islamist, it is always a problem. Zudi Jasser seems to understand this, but apparently on his radio show on The Blaze this last weekend, he went off on a few people here in America. Let me give you just the headline and a little bit of this story. The Grand Mufti of Stealth Jihad, Zudi Jasser, says there's no greater threat than Pamela Geller and her colleagues. This is from Pamela Geller. In one fell swoop, moderate Muslim, in quotation marks, Zudi Jasser has dropped a Moab on the most effective counter-jihadist in the West. The Grand Mufti of the Stealth Jihad has devoted an entire episode of his show on the Blaze Network, Reform This, to smearing me and many of my colleagues, including Robert Spencer, Andrew Bostom, Claire Lopez, John Guandolo, and others as alt-jihadists. He says there are no greater jihadists than the alt-jihadists when it comes to living in the land of freedom, because they seem to want to kill us and knock us off at the knees. Who even knew he had a show on The Blaze? Why is Glenn Beck giving this vicious saboteur a platform? Wow.
Vicious saboteur. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
Frank Gaffney immediately wrote to a group of us whom Jasser targeted, telling us to hold off in the interest of peacemaking. It was striking how quickly Gaffney jumped to Jasser's defense. I've never seen him jump to my defense like that. What a step and fetch it boy Gaffney is for Jaffer. It epitomizes how much people who recognize the jihad threat have been fooled into thinking that they have to have a moderate Muslim on board or their efforts will be criticized by the left as Islamophobic. So she is making the point that Frank Gaffney is afraid of being called Islamophobic.
Frank Gaffney seems like he has a lot of fear about being called things. His defining characteristic.
Let me welcome to the program the Grand Mufti of the Stealth Jihad,
right?
Zudi Jasser.
Or Zudi Jasser.
Zudi Jasser.
One of the two.
Yeah. Zudi, how are you?
Great, Glenn. Thank you for having me. Boy, you know, those responses sort of make me feel like I did the right thing by calling these guys out. You know, I get it. We're a minority movement. I get it that we have we're underdogs. But the issue and the reason why I finally needed to speak out is, you know, listen, over the last few months, from Stephen Kirby posting on Spencer's website, others, there's two characteristics that need definition of the alt-jihad. Number one, they view Islam as monolithic, a one entity, a monopoly, no other ideas within it. And two, they view reformers as having no hope, as liars. They constantly call me a liar about my scripture that I interpret and reinterpret in a different way from the original Arabic. So fine, I'm not trying to take away their free speech. I know they're anti-jihad, but how do they differ from the useful idiots on the left who are apologists and say that Islam is one, it's beautiful, there's nothing wrong with the misogyny in Saudi Arabia, Islam is peaceful. How does that monopoly on Islam being positive, how is their yang, not the ying, to the saying that Islam is all one and the mafia of Islam is it, and Zuhdis are just aberrations. I mean, they're actually doing the same thing by taking the oxygen out of what we're trying to do in reform. And when there's no hope for our work, we have to call it out.
So, Zuhdi, I'm sorry I haven't been following this this trial that you're going through right now until last night. And I tried to figure out what this is about. And apparently, you sent out a declaration of principles to all the mosques, or many of the mosques, and you asked them to sign on as co-signers, and many of them didn't. In fact, I think only, 40 did. And what they're trying to say is, see, Islam is a sham, and there's nobody behind you. When, if I have this right, I look at it in a different way, that you are Martin Luther, who's just nailed the demands up on the church door, and they're expecting Martin Luther to have all of the priests. How many of the priests decided to join Martin Luther? Well, not very many, especially at first, and they would call Martin Luther a failure. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, pretty close. I mean, I think our role models for what I do are John Locke, Thomas Paine, Jefferson. We're trying to create the space for Martin Luther's. I realize I don't have a degree in Sharia, but the Reformation in Europe gave space to the Enlightenment scholars to have room to do their work. When we sent that declaration out, these guys were writing at Spencer was publishing Kirby's work that said we were dead on arrival, that basically we were hopeless. And we mailed those declarations out knowing that the establishment, the Islamic establishment, would definitely reject it. But we proved our point. If they were moderates, they would have signed on. And actually, the Islamists on the left would have proven us wrong by saying, oh, they are peaceful. Well, no, we proved our right that Islamists are supremacists. And as Geller says, they're Nazis, but she's not fighting the Nazism of Islamism. She thinks all of Islam is hopeless and a monopoly. And us Muslims are lying that are trying to reform from within.
So
all we're trying to do.
So let me give a clearer example. She says that she's fighting Nazism, but actually what she's fighting is all Germans. And if anyone who says, I am not a Nazi, I was fighting against the Nazis, they're automatically lying because all Germans are Nazis. So anybody who says that they are trying to reform, I'm a peaceful Muslim, even though you're proving the sunshine and lollipops left wrong and saying, look, no, these guys are not who the left is saying they are. This is part of the Nazi party, but there are these Germans here that are fighting, but they're many Germans inside of those mosques, if you will, that are only there because they're afraid they're going to be killed by the stormtroopers. Am I right on that?
Exactly. I mean, this is why her verbiage, her messaging, is exactly what comes out of the Supreme Council of Iran, the Saudi Wahhabis, the Al-Azhar universities, the establishment that whips and flogs Muslims like myself. In the country where we can do this work, there's actually an alt-jihad movement that is basically doing the bidding of those governments by saying, oh, the mafia of Islam is it. There are no reformers. There is no reform possible. So therefore, yeah, they ignore the fact, Glenn, that we are contrite. I admit Islam has a major problem within it. We're frustrated. It has cancer. We are in the 15th century, but we need at least a little oxygen. Give us some breathing room to say, you know what, maybe there's reform possible. But when they say it's terminal, when John Guandolo posts on his site and says Sebastian Gorka, because he said that reformers need to be supported, is unfit for duty and says the Jassers of the world are utter nonsense and calls us a fantasy Islam, how does that actually then give us room to operate and let Americans see a solution? I mean, I'm a doctor. When I see patients that have cancer, I just say, oh, that's it. Call hospice. See you later. No, everybody needs hope. Our movement is about hope. We admit we're a minority, but give us some hope for crying out loud, or else you're part of the alt-jihad.
And I see now why you're calling it the alt-jihad. because it is part of the alt-right movement. This all or nothing Nazi kind of mentality of the alt-right needs all Muslims to be bad.
And you know, I didn't call it right because I think it sort of exists throughout the left and the right in America, that there are two groups on each extreme that view Muslims in a monolith. Either Muslims are all peaceful, no problem, it's psychiatric or criminal, or on the other side, there's either terrorists or terrorists in waiting. And that's not the Islam I teach my kids. Granted, they can say I'm a liar about the narrative of the Prophet Muhammad, but do you think that the Islam I teach my kids demonizes and says the Prophet Muhammad is irredeemable? That's not how you reform Islam. We have to come up, call it mythology, call it what you want. We have to come up with narratives of the Prophet Muhammad that are 21st century narratives and call that reform and renew the branding of Islam to an American type of Islam that's compatible with our Constitution. And if we can't make that distinction, Americans are going to get confused that there's no solution except this cataclysmic battle against 25% of the world's population, and that's just absurd.
Tell me one last thing. Alijah Azerbegovic? I don't know how to say.
Huge fan. We're huge fans.
Yeah, huge fan. Do you know the name, by the way? Yeah. I butchered it.
Yes, Alijah Izbegovic. You know, listen, on my podcast, I talked about many scholars that affected me. And Izbegovic was the president of Bosnia. He was in prison 15 years. He talked about humanism and Islam. You know, was he an Islamist? Yeah, he was. So listen, I'm not an Islamist, but there's books that affected who I am. Martin Luther was an anti-Semite. Jefferson had slaves. There are many people that affected who we are that had things in their lives. So Spencer then publishes that I used an Islamic supremacist as a source of reform. That's absurd. We don't take authors in total. We take some of their messages. I mean, if there was an author I could tell you is a reformer, we would just use him and say, let's follow him. But no, we had to create or invent the Muslim reform movement that has 30, 40 different scholars that we use to inform what we're doing. Izbegovic's book on Islam between East and West has a defense of secular humanism, as the ideas of humanism being central to part of Islamic ideas. I don't buy his declaration. I reject it. Our Muslim reform movement rejects it. But what they want to do is cherry pick things I say to say that, oh, that proves that I'm a stealth jihadist. So therefore, forget the last hundreds of articles and books and speeches I've given. This proves that Jasser is actually lying. I mean, that's not American. That's
Zudi,
not debate.
Zudi, I have known you. Was I the first national host to bring you to the forefront?
Absolutely. Back in 2006 on CNN.
Okay, so 2006. I've known you since 2006, and I've heard you passionate about many things. I sense something different in your voice this time. A real sense of not despair, but overwhelming frustration here from people who you would hope that would be reasonable. Am I sensing something here, or is it just hogwash?
You're right. I mean, I was blessed to have parents that came to the freest country in the world, and I'm getting squeezed from both sides of the political spectrum, and folks that are with me with a common enemy. I don't care if they believe Islam is evil or whatever as a faith, but at least give us room to operate and don't see the same things about me that the theocrats of Saudi Arabia and Iran say. Give us a little bit of room and say, well, okay, fine, a little benefit of the doubt that maybe there are versions we're minority. And in this country, when I hear this discourse between these two extremes, where are we supposed to operate? It's frustrating.
Zudi Jasser, I admire you, sir. And if Pamela Geller doesn't know why Glenn Beck gives airtime to this voice, maybe the rest of the country can understand it in just the last 10 minutes. I think you have an important voice that has been silenced by what was the left for most of the last 10 years, and now apparently being silenced by the right, or wanting to be silenced, maybe. The alt-right. And it's just as wrong. And I stand with you, Zudi. and anything I can do to help expose you to more people, I will do. Anything I can help, I will do. I think you have an important voice, and I sure appreciate your willingness to continue to stand.
Well, God bless you. Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it.
You bet.
You won't.
His podcast is on theblaze.com/radio. You should listen to it. Another thing, he threw out a lot of names, and a lot of them you might not be familiar with. One that he did mention that said, hey, you know, we need to give Zudi Jasser room to move and show that this can be reformed, was Sebastian Gorka. That is a top advisor to Donald Trump, what he's talking about there. So when you talk about where this battle is happening, it's not on the right. It's not on the Donald Trump level. It's way out in the wilderness of Richard Spencer and Pamela Geller and all these other people out there. But it's important to know that in the Trump administration, they're looking at Zudi Jasser as someone who is a real hope to solve this problem. And, you know,
and thank God for that.
I think you're right to sense that despair in him. But that's encouraging, right?
Oh, it's very really encouraging. This is the guy I've been since 2006. I've been saying Bush needed to listen to, Obama needed to listen to, the world needs to listen to. He gets it. He really gets it. And if you just want to hate Islam, he's not your guy. But if you believe, I mean, I was just in a land where people are worshiping a half elephant, four armed lady. I mean, what the hell is that? Is what I was thinking. Okay. What are the people like? If I'm going over, my job is to destroy all those people that have the elephant idol. Well, good luck with that. I don't want to join you. If you would like to help people get closer and closer to the truth and out of error, then let's have a conversation. I don't want to be the destroyer of anything unless you're trying to destroy everybody else. And that's what Islamists do. That's not what Zudi Jasser and millions of good Muslims do.
Program.
You know, it's amazing to me that the alt-right says, how dare Glenn Beck, why would he ever give voice to Zudi Jasser? Because I happen to agree with him, but that's not everybody who just gets a voice, the people that I agree with, you know, on The Blaze, which I do not run. One of the other voices is Tommy Lahren, and she had one of these guys that Zudi was talking about on her show, what, on Monday? I wasn't aware of that, but she had somebody on and basically tearing Zudi apart and saying, don't listen to these people. So there you go. How about you as a person listen to both sides, fix reason firmly in her seat, and question with boldness? For there be a God, he must surely rather honest questioning over blindfolded fear. Next, communism. What is communism? The history of communism. Part 2, next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
In the last episode, we all learned about how socialists and communists worked with the Nazis in order to achieve their ideal society. Despite how bloody and violent the road was to get there, there is no doubt that the atrocities of Hitler are rightfully recognized as beyond abhorrent. But we have to continue to be vigilant to make sure they never happen again. We must never forget. In this episode, another story of genocide that, for some reason, history has erased.
Growing deep within the roots of socialism is a brutal and dismissive view of human life.
Jonah Goldberg, author of Liberal Fascism, The Secret History of the American Left, From Mussolini to the Politics of Meaning, explains.
The essence of Marx is simply that the universe is run by these cold, material, impersonal forces, and that over time, we are going to see us move from the feudal, through the capitalist, to the socialist, to the communist stage. Along the way, a lot of people are going to get killed. And Marx was completely fine with this.
Today, most have forgotten the scale of the Soviet atrocities, particularly what may have been their most horrific. It began long before Hitler's horror was revealed. Popular uprising had become a problem in the Ukraine. Their spirit of individualism threatened the grand design of Moscow. Stalin decided to take steps and correct the problem. Stalin forced peasants to give up their farms under the banner of collectivization. Stalin took everything. Their independence, their livelihoods, and even their food, plunging the Ukraine into famine. And while the people were starving, it wasn't because the food wasn't growing. Grain production was skyrocketing. Instead of giving the grain to starving people, the Soviets exported it to fund their centrally planned industrialization. How the Soviets dealt with the hunger was inhuman. The forced famine that resulted was so horrific, the situation so desperate, that there were even widespread reports of cannibalism.
Rutgers University professor Taras Hunchak recalls.
I was once with a group of people going to one part of Ukraine, and I said, is there some older lady that could tell me something about what happened?
What the woman told him next, he would never forget.
And she said, oh my God, I really don't like to talk about that. She says, you see, there is this house on the top of the hill there. A mother ate her daughter. She was already insane because people usually reach the level of insanity. And then she committed suicide.
How did the Soviets deal with this? They printed posters that said, to eat your own children is a barbarian act. This period is known as the Holodomor, roughly translated as murder by hunger. These intentional policies resulted in murder as efficient as has ever been seen in human history. Most know that the horrors of the Holocaust resulted in the deaths of approximately 6 million Jews. But what many don't know is that the government-designed starvation in the Ukraine caused the deaths of between 7 and 10 million in just 1 year. None of this is meant to diminish the horrors of the Holocaust. The pure evil that inspired it is above question and must be remembered vividly and at all costs. Though, in addition, the other victims of vicious governments who have treated human life as nothing but a speed bump to their grand design must also be remembered.
One of the most disgusting things about the way we talk about communism is you have people talk about it as if it was this well-intentioned social experiment. But even at the level of first principles, of the sort of planning sessions, it was planned and premeditated mass murder on a massive scale.
The New York Times now acknowledges their role in the propping up of Stalin's regime by their reporter Walter Duranty. He called the forced famine in the Ukraine mostly bunk and viciously justified the millions dead by saying, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs.
He reported, no, there is no famine in Ukraine, but there is widespread mortality due to diseases of malnutrition.
Yet, still, the Times wrote in a book review that despite the fact that Friedrich Engels, one of the founders of communism, was an advocate of ethnic cleansing, he would have been a fine man to drink with. And it is surely true that Engels' larger critique of capitalism resonates down the ages. Each year, Ukrainians gather to remember the Holodomor by lighting 25,000 candles. Why 25,000? Because during this intentional famine, they lost 25,000 people every single day. Allowing this to happen one more time would be unforgivable.
The totalitarian system established by Stalin was responsible for murdering millions of innocent people. in the most horrendous way, and nobody was interested in knowing about it. The question is, what kind of people are we?
In the next episode, we'll learn about another genocidal dictator who the left avoids bringing negative attention to. In fact, it's one of their heroes, Che Guevara.
Tomorrow on the Glenn Beck Program, in Chapter 3 of The Truth About Communism, you'll learn how a liberal hero and pop culture icon tortured the people of Cuba. Listen live or online at glennbeck.com/serials.
They're all free. Please spread these. Please. People do not know the history of communism. And that particular, today's serial is really important for a couple of reasons. One, the New York Times, Walter Duranty, was a guy who would excuse anything because he wanted the dream of communism to be true. And so
whatever it was,
I'm going to dismiss this because we want this to be true. So he would dismiss things. We cannot be those people. No matter if we want our side to win or not, it has to be true. So reason number one today is important. Number two, that happened in the Ukraine. What is Russia fighting for right now? Where's the tension happening? Why are the people of the Ukraine standing up to Vladimir Putin? Because it was Stalin and the former Soviet Union.
They remember.
Killed 10 million of their parents or grandparents. They remember. And they do not want to get into that situation again. Which side are we on? Please pass this on to everybody that that you can. You can find them at glennbeck.com/serial.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Excuse me. I have some big news. If you're a animal masseuse. Now, I don't know how many animal masseuses there are in our listening audience.
We're the number three biggest talk radio show, but we're number two among animal masseuses.
Are we?
Yes.
I would like to talk to an animal masseuse, a licensed animal masseuse.
Licensed animal masseuses can be members of the National Association of Animal Masseuses.
If you are a animal masseuse, an auctioneer, a boxing announcer, a fishing guide, a landscape architect, manicurist, or horse floater.
That sounds dirty. Now, I'll be honest, that sounds dirty.
What?
I don't know what that is. Jeffy probably does.
It's like a fluffer for horse porn.
That's kind of what it sounds like, doesn't it?
Depending on which site you go to.
You're right. Now, what is an animal? Or what's a horse floater?
Discover this on Patton's Stew yesterday. It appears to be something equivalent to a horse dentist.
Yes. They call it a horse floater because the float is the file that they file the horse's teeth down with.
And why that's called a float, no one knows.
We don't know.
No one knows. Okay, so here's the thing. Washington is deciding now that in the Washington House of Representatives, so this is Washington State, mm-hmm. that they have too many people applying for a license. They don't need to have everybody apply for a license. So those occupations are targeted for de-licensing.
Now, what a ridiculous premise and world we live in, that an animal masseuse, up until this thing supposedly needed to have a license.
Or a landscape architect.
Yeah, like you now, judge maybe, them by their work.
Now, hang on just a second. Maybe a landscape architect, because maybe on huge projects, they could cause mudslides or things like that if they don't know what they're doing with the land.
It could also mess up your property if they don't know what they're doing.
But
that's your property. But depending on the scale of things, but an animal masseuse, come on, I need a license to be an animal masseuse.
You're going
to
give a massage.
Is that
to
in case
monkey?
The animals are walking by and going, I don't know, that looks like a shady massage bar.
Well, some states won't even let you do it if you've gone to school for a horse massage. Then they make you go back to become a veterinarian so that you actually have a license to be able to massage the horses. Just saying.
Jeffy knows too much.
My grandfather was a jack of all trades. He did a little of everything.
Horse floating?
He probably did.
Sure.
He was a
if you have horses,
he was a vet, but he wasn't a vet. He was an auctioneer, but he wasn't. I mean, I remember him doing the big cattle auctions, and he could do the whole, you know, he could do all that. He didn't have a license for that. He was a sheriff. He worked. He was a machinist.
How
he
many
worked
people
for Boeing.
I'm a lawbreaker. I'm going to go with you. Do need a license to be a sheriff.
Yes, you don't. No, but I'm saying.
But I'm a sheriff. You get that's an elected office.
Think of all the people.
You don't need to go to school for it, right? Yeah, you need a badge.
Yes, you need a badge.
You need a badge.
That's what I mean.
But here's the thing: why would you need a license to be an animal masseuse? Are you good at it or not?
Right.
Okay.
And first of all, I don't know who's going to answer the horse, because that's the one that would need to know. I don't know how they would know if you're good.
Well, the owner would.
I mean, honestly,
I will tell you, I'll sit in the stall
smoking cigarettes and watching Amazon, and then somebody will knock on the door. Are you almost done? Yep, almost done in here.
And the horse is like, I know you're not going to
He's loving it. He's loving it.
Well, you know, another crazy one on there that we haven't mentioned is boxing announcer.
Yeah,
so
why?
You can announce football or baseball without a license, but for boxing, you gotta have a license. That's really important. Will you know if it's the right hand or the left hand? You gotta tell. Take the test and let us know. I mean, that is ridiculous.
See, when I first got into it, and Pat too, and yeah. I bet you, Jeffy,
yes.
We used to have what was called our third license.
Third class, yeah.
Yeah, your third class license. And it was a radio telephone license. That's why it was called your third phone. First phone meant that you could fix the transmitter.
Yeah, you were an engineer.
But you had to have certain basic understanding of how the transmitter worked to be able to be on the radio.
Right, which is a bad practice, which ended.
You had to know if the station was in compliance with its effective radiated power at
Correct.
All times.
Correct.
Now, I forgot that formula a good long time ago, but they eliminated that too a long time ago.
Yeah.
So now you don't need to have a license. But I will tell you, I talked to Ted Koppel, and he said maybe we should have a license for journalists. Maybe you shouldn't be able to post things online. You shouldn't just be able to start a blog without a license.
That's the progressive mindset, though, right?
I mean,
it is.
The mindset is it's only legitimate if there's a license. The government gives it its legitimacy. And that's where the complete split is.
And here's the problem. I was talking to a friend of mine. He said, you know, Glenn, I know you're into liberty and freedom, but there are some things that we all have to agree on. For instance, you know, schooling, I mean, you know, you say that you want freedom of choice to be able to go into whatever school you want. But Glenn, most people are not smart enough to figure out what school their kids need. And I said, wow.
Such a progressive frame of mind.
Right. No, is that an awful frame of mind?
We're the
first
parent.
Of all, most people absolutely are smart enough. There's no need for them to even think about it because my job is just to put you up at the bus stop. So I stop thinking about it. Do they know what's right for their kid? Yeah, when their responsibility is given back to them and you're responsible for raising that kid, yeah, they are smart enough to figure that out.
I
said to that person, so what happens if I was in charge and I thought you were putting your kid in the wrong school? Should I be able to say that you're not smart enough? Well, no. I mean, because I'm smart enough to figure that out.
Mm. Oh. And that's the thing. Conservatism, that thing.
Yes.
And progressivism breaks down when you say, when you think you can make that choice. Because the point is to allow the person who actually is stupid to make the stupid choice. That's okay. It's their freaking life. And if that's what they want to do with their life, they want to make continual stupid choices, as I pointed, Jeffy, that is okay. You have to be able to let go and let that happen sometimes.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.